Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest this week is musician, composer, music director, sound engineer, sound designer, and producer, Yuri Gianluca Riccati. First of all, if you have an Instagram account, you probably want a lot more followers. Now, I understand why you have an Instagram account. For one reason, it's a hot platform. And the second reason is most of its users really love music, more so than almost any other platform. So the dilemma is, if you don't have many followers, how do you get them? The temptation might be to buy them. And of course, the more followers you have, the more social authority you have. So someone comes to your profile and they look and they see, oh, you have 10,000 followers, and they go, oh, wait a second, this person is popular, so maybe I should pay attention. Well, there's actually a lot of places where you can buy Instagram followers. Problem is, a lot of them are scams or phishing scams. But there are a few that are not. They allow you to buy followers either in bulk or to drip them out over time. It's not expensive at all. For $15, you can get 1,000. And there's actually a vending machine in Belgium where it only costs €3. Then usually there's an upsell that goes with it. So for another $10, you can get 1,000 likes on your 5 most recent posts. Sounds tempting, doesn't it? Problem is, it's not a good idea. The reason why is Instagram can tell when there are fake followers. They have something called an audience quality score, and there's actually multiple services out there that can provide this. So if you're thinking, wow, I'll pay for 1 million followers and then I'll get some brand to buy in because then I'll look like an influencer. Well, guess what? They can tell too. And even normal people that come to your feed can tell as well, because what ends up happening is you might have lots of followers, but no comments. And a real giveaway is all the followers come from the same place, the same city, the same country. So how do you get Instagram followers? Well, the best way is to just post really good, engaging content. Then promote your content and your Instagram feed everywhere. And even instead of spending money on buying Instagram followers, buy some ads because they really work. So don't fall for the temptation of buying Instagram followers. There are better ways to do it. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. Don't forget about my music mixing primer and 101 mixing tricks programs that will help take your mixes to the next level. Go to bobbyosinskicourses.com to learn more. Now, if you've been on this planet for more than 30 years or so, probably you're thinking that, wow, music isn't what it used to be. Especially if you're a musician, you notice that there's a lot of songs out there that just revolve around one single chord progression. And of course, we think that rap and hip hop and electronic music, well, they've ruined things by going to this particular formula. You know what? Single chord progression songs are not new. We can go back to the 80s and there's some huge hits. Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, one chord progression. Prince's When Doves Cry, single chord progression. Go to the 90s, Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve. That was based on a sample from the Rolling Stones' The Last Time. Now, what if I told you that Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit and Katy Perry's Firework and Daft Punk's Get Lucky and even The Weeknd's Blinding Lights are all one chord progression? Yeah, same thing, but you know what? They use clever development and they really changed up the melody on the chorus. So it almost makes it seem like a completely different progression when it's not. That's the whole secret. So this whole thing about boring songs, well, maybe more like boring songwriting or lazy songwriting or not really caring about melody so much to begin with. And really, that's not a big deal with the number of genres anyway. That being said, right now, there's a return to traditional songwriting, especially in the top 40. So things are beginning to change a little bit. We're also starting to hear more guitars than we've heard in a long time. So if you like things the way they used to be, well, you're getting a taste of that coming back. My guest this week is musician, composer, sound engineer, sound designer, and producer Yuri Gianluca Riccati. He's worked with a wide range of artists that include Britney Spears, Rita Ora, Casey Musgraves, Pat Metheny, John McLaughlin, Yngwie Malmsteen, and even the Pope. Since 2015, Yuri's worked on several number one records as a sound engineer and synth programmer for the acclaimed tenor Andrea Bocelli. It's with Bocelli that he's also received his 4 Grammy nominations. Plus, he's also written for a number of magazines over the years. During the interview, we spoke about recording Bocelli, working in Taiwan, playing the Vatican as a musician, working with the London Symphony Orchestra at Abbey Road, writing the mic preamp trim control, and much more. I spoke with Yuri via Zoom from his studio in Rome. So tell me how you get started in the music business. I know you were a writer as well, and I know that you're also, computer programming seems to be a first love for you, but tell me how it all started.
So I started in the music very later. I was a passionate. I started to listen to music when I was 3, because my first gift or request to my father was a turntable. And I was lucky because my father was a musician and I had a huge amount of vinyls. So I've started to listen a lot of music. And this bring me open mind on music because I don't have to general preferences. So I like everything in music. For me, music is good or not by genres, no jazz, no fusion, no rock, no progressive. It's a good or not. So I started my thinking before the career about the music was a unique thing, and where I prefer some songs, and others not. And when I was a teenager, I started to be curious about playing guitars. And I came from, computer programming, because in the 80s, a lot of kids start to use computers such as ZX Spectrum or Commodore or this kind of things. So was the, the new hype in the 80s. So everyone was started with that. So, but I was, fascinated by the music and playing the guitar in the teenage. And I start to, meet people and other musicians, in the same age, playing in the school, playing in the church, and all this kind of thing. Very easy. So, but love was amazing. Love was a lot. So when I started using the guitar, was a shock. I want to learn everything about that, everything. So I passed 8 hours a day, maybe more, to study guitars. And also English, because I was, I was in Italy, and at the time, the English was not so diffused, not so important. So, but I've started, music and English together, and I grew up with a lot of new friends. This was the very beginning of the career. After that, I've decided to have a band, so I've started to play, rock and metal, mostly metal. And with this, I've, met other musicians, especially in metal. So I've been in a music school, jazz music school first. Then I moved to Boston to go to the Berklee. And there, I've met a lot of new contacts. So I think music and relationships are very, very fused together.
Excuse me, but what's interesting about that? I went to Berklee too, and I taught there. And there's a group of us that still meet every couple of weeks and have dinner on a Sunday night. So all the people from Berklee that are out here in Los Angeles.
Exactly. Especially at the days without internet, the only possibility to share experience, to share books and VHS, if you remember, the VHS with the techniques on the with the teaching, you know, with the, and was the only occasion to have a relation with other musicians, and I met a lot of musicians, and I don't remember where I met John Norum, the Europe's guitar player, and he introduced me to Yngwie Malmsteen.
He's pretty far away from jazz.
Completely. Yeah. Then I met Yngwie in Italy. Then we start to do something together. But, you know, and about this situation, I've created a very big ring of friendship with a big musicians. And a magazine was in the 90s, a guitar magazine, asked me to use my contacts to have interviews. Was very easy, you know. And because I had to pass through the record label or through the press conference, you know, just call the people on the phone and take interviews. So I've started writing on magazine about that. And my first experience was about interviews and guitar transcriptions on that magazine. In the meantime, I finished my study and I start to record bands, record music in the, because taking the experience from Berkeley, I was one of the first in Italy to use to record with computer. In the 90s, we still on the tape and the ADAT later, you know?
Yeah.
Thanks to that, I've, you know, grow very, very slowly career. It was not so fast, but, you know, growing. So, and I met other musicians, other bands, recording, mixing, and still playing and mixing together for a lot of years.
How long were you at Berkeley?
Just 2 years, 94, 95.
That's usually the way it works. There's very few people that stay all four.
I was speaking with that about about that with Quincy Jones because he did Berkeley and he didn't finish too.
Well, yeah, but it makes sense because if you're any good, you go out and you work.
Yes, because I got to work in the meantime. Yeah, right. You're right.
The other thing that I thought was, and for me, it was a little less than 2 years before I started to teach. The most beneficial classes were the arranging and harmony classes in the first 2 years, I thought. And I didn't go beyond that, but I know what the curriculum is. And it was like, well, wait a second. This is all the good stuff here.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
If you think this is the best way to have a new kind of sound engineers that know music and can read music, it's a very new generation of sound engineers. In the thinking about in the 90s, you know, I was one of a kind because I was a musician and a mixer and engineer all together.
How did you learn the engineering part?
Well, in the studio, very old school. Stay in the studio, bring the coffee, cleaning the stuff, and look and listen and look and listen. And, you know, very old school technique. No books, no teaching. after all, I got books, of course. But in the beginning was that. And this continues to do that until 2000, because I start to make, you know, sound engineering in a lot of things, not only rock, but rock, pop, and dance music also. So some of the DJs called me in the 90s to mix their house music stuff. And in the 2005, 2004, I met Tony Rennies. He's a famous singer, but he's also a very famous producer. And he produced Julio Iglesias, he produced Nick Acosta, Don Costa, and Andrea Bocelli, of course. And Celine Dion and Pavarotti, he produced a lot of things. So he called me in a movie, and I was in the studio, and we met them just one day. And we get an approach. After that, he called me back in 2009 because the impression of what I was doing. I was lucky because I was the only sound engineer that can speak English in Italy. And because I have to work in Italy for this new project called Il Volo, together with Umberto Gatica.
Great engineer.
Yeah, amazing. He was my last tutor, was my mentor. And Umberto teach me, of course, a lot of things. And at the time, they were constricted to work in Italy because the Il Volo was three kids. Was very, very little kids, 14 years. And they can't move out from Italy to work, for the law reasons. So they were constricted to work in Italy. And I was just the one who speaks English and used to have a programming, music, and a sound engineer. So I was prepared for that. I always said to the people, just over-prepare, because sometimes will happen. And you have to be prepared for that moment. So I was called by Tony, and we started working together for Il Volo project. This opens me a lot of doors after in Los Angeles and other places, because the interaction with Umberto, with his friends, with his musicians, I met all his musicians. I met all the guys that played on his albums, Nathan East and Nicola Iuta, everyone, It was a consecution, of the work. Until 2000, I worked with Il Volo until 2012. Then I start to work with the Chinese pop star in China later. So I left Il Volo for this new work.
You went to China?
Yeah, in Taiwan.
Wow.
And then I started working over there. But Tony doesn't forget me, and they still call me for the other things in the meantime. And also, very curious things was happen. And some friend of mine that worked with the Pope called me. Then I played in Vatican,
Wow.
As a musician this time.
Yeah.
Together with singers in the front of Pope. And, I restart the career, such a movement, musicians.
What was that like, playing in the Vatican? Wow.
Well, when I met the Pope, it was very strange for me, because I have an amazing picture with him, and because I came from rock metal stuff.
Yeah.
And then I meet him. So it was so strange because, I know a lot of musicians, famous singers, but Pope is Pope.
Yeah.
Then, I still worked with him, with the Vatican. Until last year, I did a choir direction.
I bet that was amazing. The Vatican choir is fantastic.
Fantastic. But the sound is amazing.
They
have a huge sound. But in the meantime, Tony called me back again to work with Andrea Bocelli in 2014 because they start to make a new album together with Umberto and David Foster. And they did the album, amazing album called Cinema. This is one of the best albums where I worked, because when you have the kind of budget, you can, do everything you want, everything. Orchestra was London Symphony at Abbey Road. So we went to Abbey Road, we record the orchestra. Amazing experience, because the sound of Abbey is amazing. And the orchestra is a killer. They are so tuned. They are amazing, machines, because they play every day together.
Yeah.
And also, they look like family. I don't know if you went in Abbey, but they have the basement, they have a bar, such as pub, where the musicians from the orchestra goes there and play together and drink. You know, such a kind of family is different. Yeah. You know, this makes a great conjunction with them. They have a lot of relations. And so when they play, they are a single machine because they, you know, they do that since years and years. They don't change people inside the orchestra.
With Bocelli, you're doing a variety of things, right?
So I did the first things that I did in that album was to add instruments. To play pads and synths on the orchestra.
Oh, okay.
Because I used to work with the moving tempo map. And I'm very easy to work with them because I came from the orchestra stuff. So for me, it was easy to approach with percussions and synth percussions and synths and pads and FX to the orchestra, you know, to add to the orchestra. And then we back in Italy after that, we back in Bocelli home because he recorded in his home to start recording the vocal. So I was there together, me and Umberto in Andrea home to record his voice for the album. So we recorded the Italian versions with English songs and Spanish version for the Spanish market just to have the possibility to access to the Grammys, and the Spanish ones.
Yeah,
unfortunately, we were, you know, nominated for the Grammy, but we never won a Grammy with Andrea. Never.
I don't know if it means as much as it used to.
Oh, he sold millions.
That means more than a Grammy.
Yeah, you never get one.
Yeah,
he sold millions. Okay, so we did the best as possible. And the album was great and very successfully. They sold a lot. After that, I worked again with them mixing the show, the TV show here in this room.
Okay.
I mixed some TV shows here from the cinema production, you know, the live shows. And after that, we start to make other things until the last album, C, that we worked, but this time I worked without Tony and Umberto. We worked with another producer, and I just did programming on some songs. And I have to say thanks to Pierpaolo, that he's another producer of Andrea, and they are very close friends also. And when you are in a team, we're a very good team, and people enjoying you or you enjoying them, they still calling you and still working together. And now I will back in his studio to master the new album.
So you're doing a lot of programming for him then, synthesizer programming.
I love to do that. I'm a guitar player, but I love to create sounds. And also on the guitar, I love to create shape sounds on the guitar, such as e-bow stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned a lot from Steve Vai. He's curious. I met Steve many times. And I was also worked, thanks to Andrea, I worked with other famous singers, such as Ariana Grande and Dua Lipa, and etc., because they mix duets. And
right.
It was easy to have a good portfolio about that.
What would you rather do? I mean, you do so many things. What's your favorite?
Arranging. Yeah, arranging is my favorite thing. And also, I'm very happy with that because when you have a great arrangement, you have easy mixing.
Yeah.
You don't have to do nothing in the mix, just, you know?
Yeah, not enough people understand that, especially when you're younger, that the arrangement has so much to do with it. And production, if it's put together well.
I learned this from Umberto. because the first time I listened to the Bill Ross arrangements, the orchestra arrangement from Bill, William Ross, sorry, and I was shocked. I said, wow, it's mixed. Song is mixed. Just the stems are mixed. And there I saw Vinnie Colaiuta playing the drums and Michael Landau played the guitars. And Michael Thompson also played the guitars on that arrangement. They was perfect. There was no trick on mixing, nothing. Just they choose the sounds to stay in that arrangement. I learned the secret there, because when you start to mix and your song sounds great, you know, in flat, you can only make an amazing job. No fixing, no nothing, just mixing.
Yeah, I always felt that that's the one thing that's missing. You know, you can have books and YouTube videos and everything about how to do this, but never tells you that unless you know what it's supposed to sound like, what great sounds like, then you don't know what to shoot for. You have to hear that for yourself.
Yes, yes, there are no courses about that. Just the new interviews and videos from Rick Beato.
Yeah.
They discover the arrangements, they show you the chord progressions, all the things on the songs that help you, but it's a new thing. It's obvious for us.
Yeah.
But it was never considered by the didactic approach on that.
Yeah.
But when you listen to great arrangements, it's all done, especially from the orchestra. And you see people can really write for the orchestra.
When you talk about doing arrangements, that you're talking about orchestral arrangements as well, right?
Yes, I mean all, because I love arrange not only orchestra, but, you know, instruments, synths, guitars, bass, drums. And I learned that when I start the arrangement, the St. Paul Falling in pop music, I start with vocal and rhythm. When those two things are perfect, all the other stuff can reach this. You know, when you have vocal, rhythm, and bass, you have all.
That's what I teach my students for mixing, that you start with that and build it around it.
All the other things are, you know, things.
Yeah, yeah.
The most important core of the song is the vocal that have the message of the song, the rhythm, and the bass. If you pick up the Michael Jackson songs, works like that, all, everyone.
Yeah. No, I've noticed that as well. There's a certain, whenever I get a chance to sit in on something that's a hit or listen to the mix or get the multi-tracks, it's really obvious that this is so well put together that you don't do much, actually.
Genius of the producer.
Yeah.
The producer's genius is on that. If you listen the great producers, such as the English one, Trevor Horn, or if you listen to the Brian Eno works, they are very sophisticated on the choosing of the, you know, these three things, vocal, drums, and bass. And the songs work.
What is that microphone behind you?
Oh, this is an amazing microphone. This is Audio Ribera R251. It's a clone of the famous Elam 251. And I started to use that in the Bocelli album, Cinema. We were in studio, me and Umberto, and we're using his famous Elam. And in the meantime, comes Silvano Ribera, very old man. It was the Neumann assistants in Italy, okay, RCA, this kind of things. Very old man, very great culture on that. And he said, I make a clone of 251. Can we match it and see what happened? We were not happy because we were recording the album, but Andrea Bocelli, his friend, told us, no, we have to test it. Okay, we test it. So we put together, we recorded the Andrea's voice, and my face was, you know, like that. with Umberto. I said, oh, can we have one? One for me, one for him.
Wow.
Until that, Andrea recorded all the albums with this kind of microphones. And also all the other duets. Ed Sheeran singing on that, everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
This is particular. This one is which one we used for the cinema album.
Wow.
Because it was the first, and I take it.
Well, just out of curiosity, what's the signal path for Bocelli?
Not so much complicated, but very accurate. This microphone, or LM 251 through 1073 Neve to the Neve compressor, just to have the limiting sometimes, not compression, just the limiting, and go to the converters.
The old-fashioned way.
Old-fashioned way, very easy. I love to work with the trim during the session, because I used to have a paper with the lyrics, and I write in the lyrics where the volume should be, you know. And my hand is on the trim, and during the song I, you know, raise or up the trim, just to have the control of the song, because Andrea just take 3 takes for song, so we don't have time to remake it. And because he's a very, very professional, he studied the song in home. Then we came in studio, he just ready to sing the song 3 times. And very easy to work with him. But he need to listen very good. This is another secret of the vocal recording. So I put the singer in a position to have a comfortable listening. You know, good microphones, good headphones. You have to stay comfortable. And these create 3 takes, of course, but 3 amazing takes. So you don't need to record 10, 20 takes.
So you comp them together then?
Yes. Yes. We choose the best one. And just in case we need something very, but we will call back Andrea to record, but it's not always. And we don't use any kind of correction with him.
Yeah, I would think not.
And, you know, if you record too much takes, the last takes are not good. Sounds not like the first or the second. So it's not easy to make a composite with too much takes.
But he's a spectacular singer, so it's a little bit different than someone that's just good.
Is one of a kind.
Yeah.
Because he invented a genre.
Yeah, yeah.
Never seen, nobody sing it like that before. Now he's used to say, sing like Bocelli. You know what I mean? And, you know, criticism is about, you know, the pure lyrics, lyrical people, but he's amazing. And he still study every day. He's amazing.
Well, it sounds like a great gig.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes, and it's a very good ambient. I love the family, the people around him. It's beautiful to work with them.
But that seems to be the case. Everything you're telling me is a situation like that you're in, where people like you, you like them, you tend to work with them for a long time.
Yes, this is the team process. So when Tony or Umberto start new work, they think always about the people. They make everything easy, you know, easy people with easy situation, because we don't need stress in studio any kind.
I think we both know that there's many engineers and producers that have hits, but they never work with the same people more than once, which kind of says a lot about them.
Yeah, you know, it depends, but generally, famous producers like to work with the same people every time. It's easy to see that.
Tell me about working in Taiwan.
Well, it's a different place. It's a completely different place. So Taiwan, just think Taiwan is like the California of the China.
Yeah.
Because Taiwan is a place where the things happen. The production starts and the cinema starts. Now everything is moved to Shenzhen. But at the time in 2012, Taiwan was the center of the promotion of the company promotions, like say Universal or Warner. They start everything from Taiwan to bring the production in China. It's a different universe completely.
I know someone that also does a lot of engineering work in Taiwan, but the way it started for him was he had a client that was here who was Taiwanese, but he was a Los Angeles policeman. And on the side, he was singing, and he managed to get a record deal with Taiwan and then blew up. He's a huge star. I can't think of his name. David Lee, I think, is his name. He's very big. So my friend has been working with him for years, probably 10 years worth of work. And from that, he's gotten a lot of other work in Taiwan. He doesn't go there as well. Of course, with the last year, no one's gone anywhere. But even before then, everything was done online, all the mixing.
Yeah, it's not easy to find European or Americans working there because the payment is so less, you know, just it's compared to the living prices, you know. So I work at that, you know, just a little, but I'm back in here. I'm back for, you know, for this reason. And but it's a completely different world.
So tell me about working in Italy as compared to, especially Rome, as compared to Los Angeles. I know there must be some big differences just besides the culture.
It's a different culture, of course. It's a different works. Because in Rome especially, we were lucky because I used to work with people such as Ennio Morricone in studio, because his studio is in Rome. And it's a Forum Music Village. It's an amazing studio. And we did a lot of things there. Il Volo, we started to work on Il Volo on his studio. And other things that I did in the past was in his studio, in the Forum. I like the place. I like the people. It's a good, very good place to work. But we have a lot of great studios for the television's work, for music works. And Rome is a Rome. It's like, you know, it's a beautiful city with sun, amazing people. And I love to stay here.
I've only been there once, and it was only for a day.
You should be. You should come over.
Well, maybe another time soon. Last question for you. What's the best piece of business advice that you either learned along the way or maybe somebody imparted to you?
To be honest with you and with the others. Maybe sometimes doesn't pay a lot, but in the long distance, you get the price. And I think that is very, very important because I never, you know, faked or treat the people in different way. And maybe, you know, someone did it with me, of course, but I forget and I stay on my path. And I think in the long distance, this will pay you. Not only money, but, you know, a lot of things.
Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, where you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Radio Public, and Podbean. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.